stepper and I'm an addict.
Hey, Deborah.
And I told Louise when I came in, I am totally unprepared to speak on this. Speaking isn't my favorite thing to do to begin with. And secondly, topics, I never feel like I know exactly what to say. I know how to tell my story, but to speak on a topic sometimes gets difficult for me. But I know that I prayed and that God will carry the message that someone here needs to hear, even if that someone is me. So my clean date's October 24th, 1992. That's probably the most important thing that I'll say while I'm standing up here, because through that, hopefully, there's some hope that if I can stay clean, you can stay clean too. And I can tell you that our common welfare has had a lot to do with that. The program of Narcotics Anonymous, the people in my life, are the reason that I can stand before you with a little over 21 years clean. And I hold in my hand three coins. One is the Serenity Prayer. One is one of my newcomers' key tag. Unfortunately, this is not the last one of these she got. And in this hand is my brother, who was a predecessor's 20-year coin. And in between here, there's a whole lot of experience, strength, and hope. You know, our first tradition says our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. You know, and our literature talks about that the individual is precious to the group and the group is precious to the individual. And that without unity, we perish. We die. Because without unity, the groups don't stay open. They don't carry the message. Our traditions are our unity. And I can't say enough about it, and it was interesting when they asked me to speak on this. It wasn't that long ago, actually. I thought I was skating by and just... and I got a message from Courtney on Tuesday. One of my girls is speaking right now, wherever the Grove is, on steps 1, 2, and 3. But when I think about... you know, our unity and our common welfare. I mean, our common welfare, our pain's the same. We're all here for the same reason. Some of us get here by different means, but our pain's the same. And I think we lose sight of that when we get here, especially early on. It's easier for me to know that now because I've experienced it on such a deep level. Without the women in my life, without the people in my life from Narcotics Anonymous, I would not stand here before you. If I did not have a solid foundation, I've gone through a couple things clean. And I feel very fortunate, A, to be alive, and B, to still be clean. Life goes on, whether we're clean or whether we're not. It still goes on. Things still happen. And so, having had some pretty tremendous losses since I've been clean, having suffered a catastrophic illness a few years ago and surviving it, changes your perspective on life and on what's valuable. So did age, by the way. just years on this earth. And I sponsor a lot of really young women, and what I see a lot, at least in the Northeast area, and I'm pretty sure we're the same wherever we are, is we get clean and we seem to look past and forget where we came from and how capable we still are of being the newcomer coming in the door. You know, perhaps... and what I have experienced most recently with some of the women in my life, and a lot of women have come into my life recently, is, you know, some of the guys, you know, when the guys get here and they're clean, you know, they're scooping up newcomers because they're newcomers and we're sick. And the girls, I know when I got clean, You know, you could tell I was a newcomer when I walked into a meeting. There was no doubt because my attire would definitely reflect how I felt about myself. And if I could dress in a way that would get you to say something about me looking good, that made me feel good enough to sit there for a minute. Because it's only been after years of being here and working the steps with a sponsor and having a support group of women to talk to and go into meetings regularly. Still, I make more meetings than half my girls do. And that I was able to heal from the inside out. And I'm able to love myself today. I don't always like some of the stuff that I do. I don't always like the thoughts that go through my head. My nature is still there. First thought's almost always still wrong. I can still go down a very sick path. What I'm grateful for today, the longer I'm clean, the shorter I go down the path. The quicker I turn back and think, I know where that goes. I don't want to be that today. But I've seen a lot of women hurt other women in early recovery. And what's so wonderful about our common welfare and our unity is there are some women that I sponsor right now. I think I sponsor, I'm not even sure, but I think like 10 women, young women, like younger than my children, young women. And several of them hated each other. And you know what I've witnessed as a result of this program is two of them in particular that, and I mean hated, she said, if you sponsor her, that's it. And since you don't get to dictate, you know, if somebody asks me, I don't say no. I'm sponsoring that other woman, and that woman that hates her, she calls her for a ride to meetings today. She gets a ride home from her for meetings. She talks to her on the phone and texts with her. I have two women who, one of the girls that I started sponsoring recently, were very hurt by some things that she did. And because they all kept coming, and they all kept reaching out, they've healed. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
And they were all at my house about 2 weeks after I started sponsoring this woman because she reached out to all of them and said, you know what, I was a real bitch and I'm really sorry. I don't want to be that person today. Please give me another chance. And they did. And you did that for me. Now, and I've said almost every lead that I've ever done, if you haven't had your opportunity to be an asshole here, keep coming. You will. And if you're fortunate, you are grounded in this program and somebody is going to love you anyhow. Somebody is going to be there for you. You know, there are two people right now. This is a retreat I've never been to, but there are two people in this room right now that have saved my ass in the last 21 years. You know, Tim P., when I fell apart, oh my gosh, that was probably 20 years ago. Through a sponsorship relationship that ended badly, and I was beside myself. And we all have a part. And it took me a long time to learn my part. And I'm happy to say that that woman and I have reconciled our relationship. And I'm very sorry to say that she is still working on getting clean date again. You know, and Louise, oh my gosh, you know, she carried me through some of the darkest hours of my life a few years ago. My sponsor, who kept showing up when I was going through the darkest days of my life clean about 3 years ago. And I pushed her, and I mean I pushed hard. I wouldn't speak to her. I did not want her there. I wanted nothing to do with her. I was so angry at God for what was going on. And she kept coming. People from Narcotics Anonymous kept showing up. And I was, and let me tell you, I can be mean. My tongue is sharp. And what's even worse than that is when I just shut down, which is what I had done. And as a result, my body shut down, and that's when I got really sick and almost died. And truly, I have been blessed to be a miracle several times in the 21 years that I have been here. So our common welfare, it has to come first. It's why I'm alive. It's why we're all here. It's why we continue to be here and why I continue to show up. I think that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Ever, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Now I'd like to introduce second speaker, John Kay, from the Clean and Serene Group of NA in the CAMNA area of NA. You can go as long as you want. You got 40 minutes.
All I want. All day. I'm drawing an addict. I won't do that. I'm a morning person, so feels weird to hear him say from the CAMNA, being that I was this retreat's first chair the first 2 years. Strange being part of a different area and a different region. And I guess I say that partly because I've been living where I live now for about 10 years, and I fought participating in NA in my hometown. I stayed attached to this area for a long time and would drive an hour and a half one way to my old home group and our old home group. And, you know, whenever we think about this tradition, our common welfare should come first, personal recovery depends on NA unity, played a part in, you know, me changing things because I wasn't participating in my community. And I live right here. I didn't live 90 miles down there anymore. And my responsibility, you know, has to be to the community. I mean, the fellowship as well, too. It's part of the reason why I'm here this weekend. But I also need to participate in my community. And sometimes that's hard because we, you know, we're creatures of habit and we get feelings and we get complacent, and there's a lot of people in this area that I love dearly, and I don't get to see them like I used to see them. You know, just like Deborah was saying, you know, people saving her butt. I mean, when I came in 1990 for the second time, I was faced with some really serious charges, and I ended up going away and doing time. And the first time I came in, people were always at the door and greeting me back in 1988 and hugging me. You know, and that was part of why I didn't keep coming back. I wasn't okay with that yet. When I came back the second time, I craved it, and that's probably what saved my butt. You know, I couldn't wait to get to a meeting and get a hug the second time I came back. And just that greeting and welcoming, unconditional love, you know. For me, that's a whole lot of what this first tradition is about. It's unconditional love, because we as humans, as addicts, want to practice conditional love or expectational love. And it doesn't talk about that stuff in the first tradition. And applying the, you know, principles of the first tradition, it's not about having an expectation on somebody. It's about loving that person until they're capable of loving themselves sometimes. Not all the time. And it's not that we have to enable people. But sometimes, I mean, when I came in, I wasn't capable of loving myself. You guys loved me until I was capable of loving myself. And I remember when I came up from penitentiary and I ended up getting this job. And, you know, I knew I had the job, but wanted people to work there. You know, they were doing their little thing. They went in the personnel office and said, oh, you're cool, you got the job. And, you know, that person's been someone that's always been part of my life, too. And one day I was somewhere, and he was doing what I'm doing right now. And afterwards, I walked up to him, and I said, you know, hey, thanks. I really appreciate, you know, everything you've done for me. And he said, what'd you do for me? Or what'd I do for you? And I was speechless. I was like, I actually think. And I didn't answer him at the moment because I meant it genuinely, but I didn't know why I said it. And I had to actually think about that for a while. And I called him up a few days later and I said, you know, that caught me off guard. I mean, I genuinely meant that when I said it, but I was speechless when you asked me because I didn't have anything to say and I had to think about that. And what it was is, you believed in me unconditionally when I was incapable of believing in myself. You know, the act of him going in that personnel office was an act of him believing in me. You know, him telling me to keep coming back was an act of believing in me. You know, him always hugging me as soon as I saw him was an act of believing in me. You know, nowhere in our literature does it say anything about so-and-so said this about me. You know, whenever we're talking about people and they're not part of that conversation, that's not love. You know, that's disrespectful, and there's no part in love that tolerates disrespect. I mean, that drives unity. That drives a wedge in between people. We're sensitive. I don't know about you guys, but I know a big part of the reason why I'm here is because of my intense ability to feel. You know, when stuff happens in my life today, I don't know where the wood's at, but I haven't thought about using for years and years when that shit happens in my life. The thing that happens to me is, let's just get it over. Just put a gun under my chin and pull the trigger. Or get in the car, hit a wall doing 150. That's the kind of stuff that goes through my mind. And, you know, without this fellowship, I wouldn't be alive today. I mean, when I went to the penitentiary, first 2 weeks, I was on the highest tier down at Western Penitentiary. And the only thought I had for those 2 weeks, and I'll take it, I had like 10 and a half months clean and had gone to a meeting every day. And I was in the middle of this fellowship when I went away. And the same thought that I had the day I got arrested came back. Just get over with. You know, you ain't ever going to have a life. You have a felony record. What's that ever going on to? And then I started getting letters from you guys. 1, 2, 3, 4 letters. I started getting letters. Letters from people in the fellowship. And obviously I never jumped off that tier. Still here. You know, and that was people doing something for me. You know, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on any unity. You know, they were considering my welfare. They cared enough to send a letter into me. Some of them cared enough to come visit. Some of them cared enough to, you know, accept collect calls. They're not cheap. Some of the people would accept, you know, accept them, didn't have money or jobs. Coming home from the penitentiary, going through the halfway house. One of the counselors there was one of us, and right away that person recognized, I guess, who I was at the moment and what I needed. Instead of having to go through the 90-day orientation before I was allowed to leave the facility, they, you know, helped me to get right out in the community and back to my old job. And I think I was one of 3 people in the place that had the ability to go out to outside meetings. Maybe there's 5 of us. I can't remember if it's 3 or 5, but, you know, and that individual, that's, you know, they were doing their job, but at the same time, I believe that's part of that first tradition, too. You know, the recognition that, you know, that was in my own best interest, to be able to get to some outside meetings, some real meetings, because, hell, for 2 years, I didn't have the ability to get to a real meeting other than the letters that people sent me. You know, and, you know, from my own personal standpoint, you know, I grew up in recovery in Pittsburgh. You know, I left Pittsburgh and was part of this area when it formed. And there were some people who used to talk a lot about me, you know. And rightfully so, I mean, to a degree. I mean, I can't even say that. That's wrong. I don't care what it is. There is no reason for us to do this type of behavior that I'm talking about. It wasn't that I was okay, that I was doing 13-step stuff. It did not mean it was okay for you guys or some of you guys to talk shit on me because I was. My life isn't any less valuable than the other person's, and vice versa. A life is a life, period, and we often forget that in here. You know, I didn't come in here, you know, to just get off of drugs. I came in here not quite sure what I wanted, but I knew it was more than just not using. And I wanted a different way of life. And one of the things that's really hard when we come from where we come from is we're so hurt and damaged from trust issues, being burned, or burning people. You know, why did that? They're capable of doing that too. Or the fact that they did do it to us. And I was just talking with someone down at the breakfast hall about, you know, I just coming out of a relationship, and it's like there's part of me, I feel like I'm on this real shaky ground, and I am on shaky ground. I don't feel like using or anything, but I'm just, my feet still ain't stable from it. And, you know, I'm struggling with, you know, I may end up being a bachelor the rest of my life. And that's not what I was raised to believe in. I was raised to believe that, you know, we all get married, and some of my belief system, and I'm just recently learning that some of my belief system, I didn't learn the other half. That my belief system, there's another part to it that says some of us are just meant to be single, and that's okay. And I never knew that part of the belief system I was raised in. You know, I'm reaching out and trying to learn some new stuff today. And but anyways, you know, it's like part of what we were talking about was is when I was in my addiction, my best friend married my girlfriend, one of my best friends. Early recovery, I came home from doing a 7-step from Baltimore to find my girlfriend on a couch, stark naked with another guy, and Eric, and if you can picture out what was going on. A few years later, another girl that I was dating, she was started screwing one of my sponsees, you know, and on and on and on. And then, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I had this lady that I met at a world convention. Had a nonprofit organization, had double-digit, you know, clean time, and we almost got married, didn't work out, and then she pried herself back into my life like 9 years later. I got involved, and, you know, I'm believing in this person and lending some trust, and all the red flags were there. I was ignoring it, and, you know, she burnt me for 30, 40 grand. And, yeah, so today it's like I have trust issues. I always did. You know, and just little things that happen in the program. It's like I get in relationships, and it's not necessarily, you know, the male-female. Sometimes it's just with you guys. You know, it's like that question mark. It's in the back of the head. Are they going to hurt me? Are they going to burn me? You know? And I think that's natural because of the life that we have. But it's not okay for us to feed into it. It's my responsibility to do the work on that part to take the risk. And if I stop taking a risk, then I'm not living. Because living is about taking risks and embracing life and learning how to practice that love, you know, my day-to-day affairs, you know, unconditional love. It's about being at the door when that new guy or the old-timer comes in and giving them a hug. You know, that's part of what we're doing. We got two meetings going that have managed to be stable where I live now. And you know, the closest area to me is an hour and a half away where we live. And there's an old-timer from Pittsburgh that used to live up there 30-some years ago. And, you know, I talked to him. He filled me on some of the history. And it's just like we're doing what we can to try to get NA going. You know, it's like even though we're registered to this area, the area we're actually registered to is like 2.5-hour drive for us. But we actually get the most support from them guys. So that's you know, where we're at. Our calling welfare should come first. But some of us are just printing out meaningless, and we're not just doing our area. We're doing, there's an intersection of three areas right in it at this time. So we're printing out meaningless for all three areas and sending them out to professionals, welfare offices, wherever we can, hospitals, emergency rooms, and just trying to do what we can to help the fellowship grow. You know, there's some stuff that talks about in the book about our first tradition. That, you know, the home group is, you know, the most important thing. You know, without the home group, it all ceases to flourish. You know, world could fall apart. You know, a region could fall apart. As long as I show up and open that door, you know, another addict, suffering addict, might have a chance to live, you know, and I get to keep living, you know, in embracing my recovery. You know, I used to be into following all the stuff, and I do a little bit, but I don't know, I guess today I just try to keep it really simple. I sponsor guys. I miss doing H&I. I've been in H&I for a while. And just talking about that a minute ago, there's two guys sitting here that have no idea how, and there's a bunch of guys in this room, so don't feel left out, guys. There's some Swansea's in here. But two of them in particular have a special place in my heart because of H&I. You know, that's where it started for us. And, you know, they just went through some really tough times. And, you know, I could, you know, I prayed for them every day. Every single day I was praying for them. Still do. And, you know, it's just, that's what I was taught. When my sponsor was diagnosed with cancer, you know, I was there for him. You know, drove back and forth to Baltimore as much as I could, as much as I would like to. And 15 months, you know, fighting cancer, I walked through that with him. And she started out her lead with her little coins, and right away it was like my mind went blank. I'm like, oh man, I don't have my coin that he gave me. That's like a thing when I speak. There's this coin that's real special to me. He gave me it on my 8-year anniversary, and it was an infinity coin. And he said, look, he says, you might not have seen this yet. He said, and when I explain it, don't think I'm being morbid or sick. He said, we put these in caskets. He says, I'm giving it to you because I believe you're one that will make it and never, ever use again. And I was like, whoa, why are you doing that? That's a heavy weight. What would I do with it now is I carry it whenever I speak, and whenever guys I sponsor speak, I usually give it to them and let them hold it and pass the torch to my sponsor. I've given it to him, and actually he's held it on the world stage at a world convention. And one other guy that wasn't actually part of the family, but my sponsor actually considered asking him to be a sponsor one time. Anyways, you know, the biggest thing, I guess, is always questioning myself, how am I being loving in my action with you? You know, how are you being loving in your action with me? And if you're not being loving in your action with me, it may be because you're just not at a point that you're capable of doing that, but that doesn't mean that I should not still practice unconditional love with you. You know, it's like the speaker was saying last night, you know, about the guy that he could smell. I remember a few of those in my journey. I remember the one guy in Indiana, man, I was afraid to get near him because there were bugs flying off him. And when he'd come over, it would be like, he ain't coming towards me, is he? And I ended up being his sponsor. And a lot of times people didn't listen to him in a meeting, and that guy actually had been in and out and had been around the room since 1980. And if you got talking to that guy, even though he didn't accumulate a lot of consistent time, he had a lot of wisdom, you know? And, you know, I think having an open mind, regardless of what I think, because sometimes we do that, we'll think, you know, why am I listening to that person? When I listen to that person, that's part of practicing the first tradition. You know, and when I don't listen to that person, I'm robbing myself of the opportunity of receiving God's message to me, because I don't ever know where it's going to come from. You know, I've had come to me from someone who was using. I think I had like 6 or 7 years. And I went to a meeting, and my life was all upside down, and career and all this stuff, and I'm babbling in a meeting. And a friend of mine I knew had just relapsed, and he was at the meeting, and he was high. And he heard what I shared, and after the meeting, he pulled me aside, and he said, you know, I just think you need to hear this. He said, some people dream of success and happiness, others stay awake and make it happen. And I was like, wow. I mean, that was exactly what I needed to hear. You know, it was like I needed to take action. no different than what I do in this program, but with my life outside of here as far as career and jobs and stuff. You know, because my first drug in life was fantasy. You know, I wanted to just fantasize about, you know, oh, this will happen. And nothing happens unless I take action. And, you know, the message came from someone that was actually high. You know, if I hadn't been listening because I judged that person for being high, I wouldn't have received the message I needed to hear that day. You know, so when we don't take time to welcome that new person, make them feel loved at the door, and for me, some of the guys I sponsor comment on it, you know, when I'm at a meeting, I love to see my friends, but I don't care about the socialization that goes on there as much as I do recognizing someone that's there for the first time, or they may be visiting from out of time, whether they have, you know, 3 months or 20 years, and making them feel welcome. Because I've had, you know, privilege of traveling, you know, my years here, and I've gone to places where I felt more welcome than I do sometimes at my home group, and I've gone places where it was like, shit, they didn't even notice me. I could have been an elephant in the room and they didn't see me. You know, and that's not the way I want my home group to be. That's not the way I want to be as an individual or as a person. It's not for me to try to carry you. It's for me to live these principles and these steps to the best of my ability and being an example and a shining light of what the message is, so that I can be an attraction and a vehicle for the higher power that I understand to work through me. You know, I kind of touched on a little bit earlier as far as the 13-step stuff, you know, and it's like when I get in relationships, and I'm doing that 13-step stuff, that's not the first tradition. That's John's best interest, or John's self-centeredness, John's instant gratification, getting what he needs and not caring about somebody else, and how this might affect them or myself. Sometimes that can happen in just any relation. Hey, old friend. Sometimes, good example of the topic. It's like me and that gentleman that just walked in. There was a time where me and him used to be at odds. A lot of odds. But put a newcomer in front of us and watch what the two of us did. That's our common welfare, you know? And today I do my best to keep an open mind to the people who are trying to do something and be available. And I'm grateful that people are willing to go out of their way for me even to this day. You know, I know there's all it takes is a phone call. You know, it was one of the best things that was ever taught to me. It was first thing when I came in. Get sponsor, get phone numbers, preferably not the same person. Call a couple people every day, not just your sponsor. Go to a meeting, ask for help, give thanks, and don't use. And to this day, it's like when something goes on, even sometimes when nothing goes on, or something good goes on, I talk about what's going on in my life with the people on the other end of my phone just about every single day. I don't think there's a day that goes by I don't talk to somebody in recovery on the other end of the phone. And for me, that's really critical too, because I have 2 meetings that I can get to a week where I live. I miss the availability of meetings in this area when I was in this, and I miss it even more so where I could go to as many as 8 a day where I grew up in recovery in Pittsburgh. I actually did that one time. I don't know if I have much more. I feel like I'm running into a wall. I read this morning a little bit, and every 2 months or so I read the first tradition, and pick this up, and I'm just going to read this, and I want to shut up after that. When we apply anonymity to the first tradition, we overlook the differences that would separate us in the context of unity. Anonymity means that the message of recovery is for every addict who wants it. We learn to set aside our prejudices and focus on our common identity as addicts. Each of us has an equal right to and responsibility for the well-being of Narcotics Anonymous. An atmosphere of love and care in our meetings helps members feel comfortable and safe. The love we show each other attracts newcomers and strengthens us all, fueling our sense of unity and common welfare. Thanks for letting me share.